I remember, and I found myself saying, y'all, I remember when we didn't have cell phones and you didn't text and you called your friends at their house.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields.
I want to let everybody know before we start this podcast that we're on a tight time crunch today because my guest, Scott Slatton, he has another gig to get to. He's doing another podcast for somebody else,
making another
guest spot like he does on this one.
A special guest appearance. What's the name of that show?
Please. This will probably increase their listenership tenfold.
Simple Civics Podcast. It's put on by the GreaterGoodGreenville.org is what the name of the organization is.
Nice.
I think it's a county office of some kind. Anyway, I'm going to make an appearance, a special guest appearance.
Right, like you do here.
To talk about annexation.
Riveting.
How about that?
That is riveting information.
Well, I think they'll probably get educated on some things.
I completely agree with you.
Don't you expect?
I think it's time to school
Maybe
a little
bit. Dispel some myths.
I think you're going to have to put them on a bus and take them to school.
Lay down some knowledge.
I like
it. And see how it goes.
You don't
right?
say lay down knowledge. You say drop some knowledge.
Drop some knowledge. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I feel like as a younger generation, I need to keep you up on all the
I'm not schooled in the vernacular.
Right. Well,
Of the kids.
You don't lay down knowledge. You drop some knowledge.
I drop knowledge.
Right.
What do I lay down?
We're not going to talk about that. This.
Oh, lay down the law. Mr. Producer says lay down the law.
Very good.
I haven't laid down the law in a long time.
I appreciate you saying that, Mr. Producer.
I don't know that I've ever laid down the law here, but at home, I used to with my children. I don't with Dr. Slatton, of course.
Well, I think she lays down the law.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, I think you've laid down the law here a couple times.
Haven't? Not on purpose.
No, I think sometimes you just get real exercised about things.
I do.
Then you start pointing and then... You know, we know to kind of...
A waving of the arms.
Yes. Flailing about. I think...
Yes, that's an accurate description.
Your face gets red. You start fanning yourself and like messing with
really
your hair.
Hot. Yeah. Just back up and let it play out.
I will tell you...
That he stays safe. Doesn't, knock anything over on himself. So.
When I was growing up, we would know when my dad had had enough.
Yeah.
And his cup was huge. I mean,
I had a thimble when I was.
My mom was the disciplinarian. I mean, she would say, "You better wait till your daddy gets home." The two of us would be like, "Okay,
yeah, right.
It's not going to do anything." Yeah. But we knew that if he took, like, if he bit his knuckle,
go.
Like if he would like stick his,
like self-mutilation.
Like
God!
Like he would stick his finger, like his knuckle, in his mouth, and he'd talk, like, be like, "Girls," we would be like, "Oh no, like this is it." We have pushed him to the absolute limit.
I'll admit that is a quite menacing gesture. There's no doubt about it.
I think it kept him from saying things that he probably wanted to say, but he never did.
If he's willing to inflict that kind of pain on himself, just
imagine
what he would do to you.
I mean, I don't think he tried to, inflict pain on himself.
We'll have to get Jimmy in here and see what he thought about that.
I think he did that so he would not say things that he wanted to say. Scott, we had a lot going on this week. A lot of things are kind of starting to move compared to the whole and what the 360 something bills that are just we have in our tracking system.
Right.
It's not that much, but there are big issues that are getting some traction.
Yes.
As we move closer and closer to the end of the session and then closer and closer sooner to crossover.
Getting attention from both chambers at the same time.
Right. That's a very good point.
Which is significant.
So I think, let's talk a little bit about what we're looking at for next week, like kind of the schedule for next week, and then let's take a step back and go through, give everybody kind of an update on what happened this past week. So the House is on furlough next week.
Yes. Well, most of them are.
Most of them are. So the House is on furlough, which means all but the House Ways and Means Committee members will be gone.
There's what, 23
something like that.
Ways and Means members, something like that.
Those committee members will be in town because on Tuesday they are going to start debating their version of the state budget.
In the full Ways and Means Committee.
In the full Ways and Means Committee. So all the subcommittee chairs will get together and they will start, they will present the money and their proviso packages.
Mm-hmm.
And they will start debating, you know, where they should put the money. Now, based on past experiences, they have probably already met and worked it all out.
Yeah.
At least that's what we all hope.
Yeah.
And then they will also introduce some new provisos in the full committee.
Which is where we have to really pay attention.
Yes.
And as Joni said, probably at HLAD, and we've said before, provisos that get introduced at full Ways and Means Committee are going into the budget, into the Ways and Means version of the budget.
It's very difficult to get a proviso out of the budget on the floor.
It's difficult to, A, stop them from getting into the Ways and Means version of the budget at full committee.
Correct.
Because you don't find out about them until they pass announce them out. Them.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes you don't even get a copy of them. Right. They're just right. handing them out to the members.
And then once they're in there, it's difficult, as you said, to get them out after the Ways and Means Committee puts them in.
So right. And then that point.
At least in the House.
Right.
At least in
and
the
then
House.
We can yeah. try other ways
right.
to
right.
get provisos out. So that is what, and the Senate is in a regularly scheduled week.
Well, let's back up real quick.
Okay.
Nobody be surprised then next week
okay.
when the Ways and Means Committee adopts a proviso that attacks our regulatory authority on short-term rentals, for sure, we expect, because that's been a perennial thing, and then who knows what else.
Correct.
We'll know just like everybody else when they announce
right.
it and read it very quickly
and
into the budget.
We might get a heads up maybe that morning
yeah.
or that afternoon mm-hmm. that, hey, this is coming.
Right.
But rarely do we get a chance to, because, you know, they're not taking testimony in full committee.
No.
Although we have been working on, we've certainly been sharing our opinion
yeah.
on short-term rental legislation
yes.
and our kind of hard line that we have to maintain regulatory authority.
Right. Joni will be there.
Absolutely.
For the duration.
Every bit of it. Mm-hmm.
So, but, I always say that with fewer new dollars that they have this year compared to last year especially.
Right.
That likely will lead to fights.
Correct.
I don't know that you'll see a lot of fighting in Ways and Means. The fight usually comes once the budget gets to the House floor.
Correct.
I would hope that they're going to have it resolved as we expect, and they'll want to leave too. They're
right.
not going to want to stay all week
no.
while everybody else is gone.
And
so
they usually
I bet you they get it done.
They usually get done
quickly.
On Wednesday, maybe like late
morning.
Wednesday afternoon well, sometimes.
Yeah. But I don't expect them to be in all
no,
of next week.
No, I don't either.
I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't decide to come in on Monday, start on Monday.
I know. They usually do that with
yeah.
the floor debate.
Yeah. So anyway.
So that's what's going on next week in the House. The Senate is business as usual. That is everything going just like it should. No furloughs, no,
yep.
you know, perfunctory session, no nothing.
Yep.
I'll tell you this, though. The Senate placed Senate Bill 915 on special order. That bill is, I believe, Senator Davis's bill that creates the Executive Office of Health and Policy.
Right.
Last year, if everybody remembers, and I think we've talked about it on the show.
We have.
They passed a bill into law, the governor signed it, that splits the gargantuan Department of Health and Environmental Control mm-hmm. into two separate cabinet agencies.
Right.
This is the bill, and it's 915 in the Senate and 4927 in the House. 4927 is moved onto the calendar. So not next week, but the next week.
Onto the House calendar.
The House calendar.
Mm-hmm.
They will get to that bill, 4927, after next week's furlough.
Okay.
The Senate on Tuesday plans to start debate on Senate Bill 915.
They set that for special order
they
yesterday,
set it for special
didn't
order,
they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and Senator Davis got up today and kind of introduced it, passed out some materials, so senators would have the weekend to look it over and study it and make sure they understood what the bill does.
And these two bills put the mental health services, public health services, all those related kinds of services under that one cabinet agency whose director would be appointed by the governor, creating sort of a one-stop shop, if you will, for all of these sort of public health services, which is under the umbrella of DHEC right now or soon won't be. as opposed to having those kinds of services lumped into the, under the same umbrella with environmental regulation,
right,
like clean water,
that's right,
sewer, clean air, all, you know, any sort of non-human health related material subject is where they are now. So the idea being, if we can split this behemoth of DHEC, mm-hmm, into separate agencies, there'll be some more accountability. There'll be better coordination among those like type services or related services.
Correct.
That's the concept. That's the idea. And we'll see what the versions of those bills turn out to be. If we'll see who passes one first.
Right.
Presumably the Senate's going to get a week's head start.
Yeah, the Senate's they're a little bit ahead of the game.
So we'll see how it all goes at the end, and if it will be successful. That we won't know that for another probably 5, 6, 7 years,
yeah,
10 years.
Yeah.
I'll be gone by then, so I'll be fine.
You'll be
I won't
gone.
Be dead. I'll be retired.
I was about to say, yeah. Good Lord of mercy.
No. Well, I don't expect to be dead, but
no, you're not,
you never know.
Don't worry. You won't be.
Who knows? You're not promised tomorrow, so Mr. Producer.
So that is, thanks for that tidbit of wisdom. That is why, Mr. Producer, he stays as a special guest and not a permanent co-host. So that is what we're looking at next week. House furlough, House Ways and Means Committee meet. That committee meets next week to do the budget. And then Senate will start on the DHEC split bill.
Mm-hmm.
So things got a little testy late last week. Testy this week on the gun bill.
Yeah. Yeah. On the permitless carry bill.
On the permitless carry bill. So the Senate amended it and sent it to the House.
Yep.
Governor Henry McMaster urged the House members to just adopt the Senate version.
Correct.
Get it to his desk as fast as they can.
Because he wants the felon in possession enhanced,
yes,
penalties.
Which is included in the Senate version.
Which
of the
is
bill.
in that bill, yes.
The House said, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're going to amend it back to its original version and send it back to the Senate.
To the House's version.
To the
right.
House's version. Mm-hmm. That's what they did. There were some words exchanged. Well, no, there weren't words. There were some tweets and there,
yes,
were some statements put out.
Right, right.
There were some press releases thrown around.
Yes.
And then the Senate non-concurred, obviously, with some words, mm-hmm, that were attached to that non-concurrent
motion.
That
was on Tuesday, yep.
And now it's in conference committee. The Senate has yet not appointed conferees because today, Thursday, the House just appointed. They just got the notice that the Senate non-concurred.
Right.
And they appointed, Speaker Pro Tem Pope appointed Representatives Micah Caskey from Lexington, Bobby Cox, the author of the bill, from Greenville,
mm-hmm,
and Justin Bamberg from, you guessed it,
Bamberg.
Mm-hmm. And so we will probably get those Senate conferees on Tuesday.
And a conference committee, listener, if you're new to the show, is a committee of three House members, three senators, who come together to work out the differences in the two versions of the same bill.
Right.
So the Senate amended a House bill. The House said, we don't like those amendments. We changed it back to what we sent you. Now the conferees get to work out the differences in those two versions of the same bill. They can't add anything new. The conferees can't.
Correct. Unless they get free conference powers.
Unless they get
powers.
Permission from their bodies. Mm-hmm. And which the House did not grant free conference. Of course, they usually will. They'll grant free conference, Casey, when they're making the appointments, right?
Correct. No. They have to come back.
Do they come back and ask for it?
They have to meet, decide
then,
they need free
they
conference,
need okay,
and then
gotcha.
They can come back and they can get the free conference.
Right.
You know, talk about what they want to add and then adopt the report,
right,
all in the.
But that's to add something.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they have to work within the constraints of the two versions of the
that's
bill.
That's right. They got to pick one or the other. Little pieces of it.
Yeah.
They can puzzle it together.
They can meld the two
right.
together, but they can't add anything new that's not already on paper, you will.
This really should be interesting to see how much the Senate is willing to give on their version.
Is there any obligation on the Senate's part to even appoint conferees?
If they want a bill passed, they will.
Right.
Depends on how bad they want a bill passed.
Right.
You know, I mean, there have been times where there have been conferees appointed and they don't show up
and they
to
didn't
the
meet.
Meetings and
right.
they never met.
Yeah.
And the bill
that
died.
Happened to us. I can't remember what the issue was several years ago.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not, ain't nobody going to jail if you don't appoint conferees.
Right.
But there'll be some mudslinging for sure.
Be curious to see who ends up on that. You have to know that Senator Shane Martin from Pauline will be on the conference committee for
Absolutely.
The Senate.
He really led the charge on the Second
it's his
Amendment.
Bill, so.
Normally, they will do two members from the majority party and one member from the minority party.
Right.
Okay. That's guns.
Yes.
Nothing will happen next week because the House is gone.
Yeah, House ain't here.
So that's...
Everybody just hold off. You can't start toting yet.
That's right. That's right. Unless you have a permit.
Unless you got a CWP under the current law. Wait till we tell you.
Congratulations on your retail liquor sales on Sunday.
I had nothing to do with that.
I just thought it would be fun to say that.
4231.
4231 got third reading today in the House. That would allow municipalities to vote to allow Sunday liquor sales.
Yeah, retail liquor sales. The Red Dot stores would be allowed to stay open on Sundays from 1 to 5.
That's right.
If the city council or county council puts it on a ballot and the residents vote in favor of it. So we'll see. That's going over to the Senate now,
The
right?
bill was read across the desk today, in the Senate and referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Where it will start that side of the legislative process.
Right. That's correct. Also, your Compassionate Care Act bill, the medical cannabis. He didn't have anything to do with that either, but I just keep saying.
Well, no, I mean, we had some input
because
we
protected the zoning authority.
Precisely. The other thing I forgot about this, there's a clause in that bill that allows municipalities specifically to allow or not allow a dispensary within its boundaries at all.
Oh, wow.
So if a city council and its residents say, no, we don't want a dispensary in our mm-hmm. city, then
they don't get
in
it.
This
don't
Senate
it.
Version of the bill that passed, mm-hmm. they can do that. They can keep them out. I don't know why you would.
So that bill now goes to the House for debate. Scott, if you remember the last time the Senate passed the Compassionate Care Act, yeah. It went through the committee process and got on the floor. And the first day it was called up, Representative John McCravey, a Republican from Greenwood, raised a point of order. And Speaker Pro Tem Tommy Pope sustained that point of order, ruling the entire bill out of order because of a section in there that raised taxes.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this last week. Yep. I think that, you know, bills that generate revenue have to start in the House. That part has been taken out.
Yes.
I heard this morning on the Senate floor that this is probably the most restrictive medical cannabis bill in the United States.
That's correct.
But it's still available to those who need it.
Yes.
And want it. So we'll be watching that closely as it goes through the process in the House.
The House did the House read that across today for first reading or not?
I didn't.
I don't think I heard it.
I don't remember.
Or maybe I did. What was that bill number?
I think 423.
Maybe it did. Because it was really... Bubba handed...
Like really thick.
The speaker a big thick bill binder.
I want to say that it was.
That might have been it. And the speaker didn't really know what... Maybe it was...
I think it goes through 3M.
Maybe it was Tommy that he handed... I can't remember. Whoever he handed it to...
Wasn't positive about what to do with it.
What I do with it.
Then, all right. So also... We were on a board, MASC, Municipal Association board call this week, mm-hmm. and Mayor Brandon Smith from the city of Greenwood, he asked you a question about liquor liability.
Yeah.
And he said, this is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest issue that mayors and council members are dealing with because of the businesses in their cities and towns that are going out of business because they can't afford the liquor liability.
The mayor
insurance.
Said that none of the businesses that he was aware of in Greenwood had been a victim of this problem yet, but he's concerned about it and the future effects that it will have if the problem continues to grow. So, and there was a lot of talk this week. There were two meetings and a lot of talk this week about liquor liability and the joint and several liability issue that are tangled up with one another.
Correct.
Depending on who you talk to.
There's two Senate bills and one House bill. You are following all of this
yeah.
for the Association for Cities and Towns. And House Bill 5066. You were actually there today, Thursday.
Yeah, about an hour ago.
They heard testimony from a couple of restaurant owners.
Yes.
About how difficult it was to afford and no options and...
Yeah, Carl Sobinski, who owns Table 301 Group of Restaurants in Greenville, okay, was there. So think the Lazy Goat, think Sobeys.
Yeah, know all those places.
So he owns that group of restaurants, and he... So this is what I can't figure out, and I'm not sure there's a straight answer.
Okay.
So we've talked about, Casey, before, how the Senate kind of poo-pooed or refuted this notion that there's only a couple of insurance companies that are operating in this space, in this liquor liability space.
And that was Tuesday when...
Well, that was last week, too.
Yeah, they've met twice. Yeah. That subcommittee's met twice.
So the story is there's only a couple of insurance companies that are writing policies in South Carolina. Director of the Department of Insurance told a Senate subcommittee a couple of weeks ago, well, there's 40-some-odd that are actually can write policies in South Carolina. But then the finer point, I think I even said it last week, the finer point is, yes, there may be 40-some-odd, but there's only a couple that are, A, willing to write a policy, and B, can write a policy that's even remotely affordable.
Right.
And when I say affordable, that's relative to – it's relative depending on the business. So again today in the special ad hoc committee in the House, Representative Jason Elliott chaired that. He's sponsoring House Bill 5066.
Right.
And we'll talk about what that bill does in a second. Carl Sobinski said that they solicited 40 companies for a quote on their insurance. He said they had three that would quote on all of his insurance together,
like as a package.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then their liquor liability policy that they're eligible to purchase or will purchase has gone up since 2020. In 2022, their premium was $62,000 just for the liquor liability.
Good Lord.
The quote they got this time was $115,000. Now, that covers all seven of his restaurants. Then there was a local business owner, and I hate that I didn't catch his name, but he operates an arcade on Main Street. It's a business here in Columbia.
Like Transmission Arcade?
Is that what it is? Yeah.
That's the name of the arcade on Main Street.
Yes, Transmission Arcade. He sells alcohol. It's a family place, but he sells alcohol.
Sure.
He said that when they started their business in 2020, their liquor liability premium was $6,000. He says it's now over $65,000.
Good Lord.
And there's only one insurer that is willing to write their policy. So this is a problem. And the owner of Transmission talked about, he's been in the food and bev business in Columbia for a long time.
For a long time.
But he was talking about that there are other colleagues of his around the state who are looking at $88,000 for liquor liability. And the whole issue is holding those who are irresponsible operators to account rather than the premiums holding everybody at fault for a few bad actors.
Right.
These two guys who testified today operate good, clean businesses. They follow the law. They do training on their own. They take all of the risk management measures that they can. Mm-hmm. They've never been sued. They've never been faced with a claim themselves.
Right.
Yet they are having to presumably pay through increased premiums a price that's being exacted by bad operators. Uh-huh. So Representative Elliott's bill seeks to attack this problem in a couple of ways. First, it sets up a trust fund run through the Department of Insurance that would help supplement businesses who can't afford the premiums. It would help create sort of a cushion fund, if you will, to kind of soften that blow.
Right.
But then it also seeks to reduce that $1 million coverage requirement that's in the law now down to $500,000 if you do certain things. Training of your staff is one,
right,
and the other is closing by 10 o'clock. Now, that's a problem for a lot of places.
Yeah.
The transmission owner said, look, venues don't even open until 7, 8 o'clock.
Right. Well, if you're having a musical guest, right. Like if you're having a band or right. somebody well, come play, they don't go on until I'm going to bed.
What's the front porch? What's the place down in the Vista called that's the music venue? It's not
the Senate?
Well, no, it's not this. Is it the Senate?
Tin Roof has people
yes,
play.
Yes, Tin
the
Roof.
Senate,
Tin Roof.
Down there.
So Tin Roof is a venue. It's not a restaurant, right? I mean, they probably sell some food, but you don't go
they
in there.
They do
to,
sell food.
Yeah, but you don't go in there to eat necessarily.
Yeah, I think they do sell. Don't they sell food, well, Mr.? I mean, I think they do have a menu.
I've never been in there.
The Senate is strictly a
is
venue.
A venue. Okay.
So they sell beer and wine,
okay.
music,
so
and
the,
liquor.
So the Senate charges ticket admission, but that's all yes. going to the band, as he explained. Which,
I've seen a lot of people play the Senate. It is a great venue and a lot of fun.
But the Senate is making money off of the alcohol that it's selling during the
that's
course
right.
of that event. And that event's not going to, you're not going to, that place is not going to close at 10 o'clock.
No, we're not. I mean, we're not getting out of there till midnight.
Right, right. So,
ooh, that's late.
You know, so, but Representative Elliott heard that. He understood that. He got mm-hmm. that. The other subcommittee members here heard that as well. That's his idea for dealing with this problem. On the other side of the State House, though, let's walk across the hall,
love the
shall
sound
we?
Effects. The sound effects are amazing.
It's back to the old radio days.
If you,
there,
if you have
Mr.
on,
Producer.
If you're Joni and you have on heels, it's like
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
Like you have that heel just.
So we walk over to the Senate, and so far, the two subcommittee meetings that the Senate has held are focusing, I think, on the Department of Insurance getting into the rate regulation business
right.
on liquor liability.
Right.
So Senator Dick Harpootlian from here in Columbia, he has, through his line of questioning to all the people that have come in front of the subcommittee, has been interested in making insurance companies demonstrate to the state, the Department of Insurance, why it's setting its rates where it is on liquor liability. His thinking being, and I don't want to take words out of his mouth, but if nobody's holding them to account,
right, the insurers
right. for why they're setting their rates are where they are, then they can just set their rates wherever they want to without any justification.
Right.
And not having to explain themselves to anyone. He, I think, would, and I think the other members of that subcommittee are interested in the DOI getting into the business of reviewing those rate cases and then limiting the amounts of the rates that could be charged for liquor liability, just mm-hmm. like they do already for homeowners insurance, auto insurance, those kinds of things.
Right.
But there's a whole bevy of things that of coverages that DOI does not regulate. But seems like right now the Senate, if it does anything, and I don't think they're going to do anything anytime soon.
Right.
If they do anything, that will be the direction that the Senate moves in.
I think it was this subcommittee the other day. On Tuesday, I think, where Senate President Thomas Alexander,
yes,
he was the first person to testify to say we have to do something about this.
Well, and so let's keep in mind why that subcommittee met this week. It wasn't to talk about liquor liability,
right?
Necessarily,
right?
It met ostensibly to discuss the joint and several reform
right.
that needs to take place in the state, or some people think needs to take place,
right.
And by that is the proper assignment of liability and therefore damages to the people who are responsible proportionally for some sort of damage. So if and it was really educational to listen to this. So if the person who's suing a company is found by a jury to be 20% liable for what happened to them, then if they're suing for $1 million, then, you know, take off $20 million or $200,000. So that leaves $800,000 to split up amongst the rest of the people. Well, right now, I don't think there's any statutory way, and attorneys can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no rote statutory formula for how to make that assignment, especially when you complicate those awards if one of the parties being sued has settled.
Okay.
So then you take that out of the equation, and the person who or the business who has the most responsibility may end up paying little to nothing or mm-hmm. disproportionately less than what he or what they should.
Right.
This is a confusing explanation. It's a confusing issue. But this is this joint and several issue is what is fueling part of the problem with liquor liability, because we'll go back to the Folly Beach case.
Right.
The woman was sued. The victim's family sued the three bars where right. this young woman had
was
been drinking.
Yeah.
Right. And so in finding out who's responsible for what, the party who overserved her the most, if you will, could get away with not having to pay anything or mm-hmm. or very little compared yeah. compared to the others who don't bear as much responsibility. I don't know how you untangle that whole mess. Yeah. There was some really good testimony from some smart people. But again, I don't see the Senate in any huge hurry to address liquor liability outside of regulating those rate making.
Right, right.
I
this
really
is just
went
gonna
on
take
for
a long,
long
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
Sorry.
Really did. You started to drone on.
Yeah, I apologize for that.
I woke up.
But it's tough.
It was a good little nap.
It's difficult. And I'm a layperson. I'm not an attorney.
That you just play one on TV. I saved the best for last. And I know that Erica Wright on our staff will be excited about that. So this week she has been working with the city of North Charleston. The Charleston Chamber and several House members in that area, in the Berkeley, Charleston, Dorchester area, to have a subcommittee hearing, get this bill moving to expand the allowances in a military TIF.
Yes.
Tax increment financing district.
Correct.
In a TIF district. She shepherded this bill as well as support for this bill through a subcommittee this yep. week on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. The new North Charleston mayor, Reggie Burgess, former chief of police, now mayor, and his director of administration, Ryan Johnson, who learned from Ray Anderson, the late Ray Anderson, and
yep.
former mayor Keith Summey.
Yep.
They were in town to testify in favor
yes.
of House Bill 4552. Erica also testified just the fact that we, the Municipal Association, supported this bill.
Yeah.
It was in a 3M or medical, military, public, and municipal affairs, municipal and public affairs subcommittee.
Right.
Former Mount Pleasant Councilman Joe Bustos is the chair of that sub. They passed the bill on to the full 3M
yes.
committee, and Erica will continue to work that bill through the process.
Yeah, I think everybody understood the issue and was willing to be a part of it. Asked some good questions. A couple of the subcommittee members did.
Yep.
Related to, so the purpose of the bill is to specifically allow affordable housing development to take place in military TIF districts.
Yeah.
When those former military bases were turned over for development, the General Assembly passed a law to allow for a tax increment financing district to be established in those areas. But one of the things it left out was the development of affordable housing, which is in the
Correct.
Regular TIF law. So there's a regular TIF law
Right.
for everybody else. And then there's the military TIF. The military TIF did not have affordable housing as a potential benefit like the regular one does.
Right.
So that's what this bill does mostly. A couple of really good questions about affordable housing and in general, what can we do to improve the opportunities for affordable housing to take place or to be developed across the state? One of the House members mentioned, hey, higher density is a good thing. I was really surprised to hear this particular member extol that virtue, but he
Right.
did. I'm glad that he did. And then
a lot of people don't agree with him, though.
Well, that's right. A lot of NIMBYs in his district would yeah. not approve of higher density development, but he certainly seemed in
favor of
it.
What is a NIMBY, Scott? Tell everybody.
Not in my backyard. Our listeners are smart enough. They know what NIMBY is.
Okay,
come
I'm
on.
Just making sure. If we had a layperson listening, I just
that's
wanted to make sure
well,
they
possible.
Knew.
Yeah, that's possible.
They knew what a NIMBY was.
And then, of course, another member said, well, hey, what about cities increasing the density allowances in their zoning ordinances? I think a lot of cities encourage density in their zoning ordinances. And Ryan responded very, very well to that, saying that, hey, yeah, we do have density bonuses in our existing ordinance, particularly along transportation corridors in the city of North Charleston. So I was encouraged to hear these two conservative members of the House of Representatives talk about density and that being a good thing. So maybe some of these issues are starting to kind of hit home and make people understand that density is not a bad word.
Right.
It's a good thing in the right circumstances.
As long as it's managed. You have the resources to,
sure,
you know, help.
You know, the other part of it is, Casey, when we talk about density, most of the time we're only thinking about density spreading out horizontally.
Right.
Not vertically.
Correct.
That's correct. I think we all here in South Carolina, because we've had such a wealth of undeveloped property outside of our cities, that we really didn't think about going up, mm-hmm. but I think we all really start thinking about, as cities and towns, thinking about going up instead of out. Mm-hmm. So that's just me.
Those are all of the legislative issues that I have.
Okay.
For this week.
All right.
Now I would like to challenge you to a trivia question.
Okay.
The weather outside is not warm, but it's
warm.
It's like our fake spring.
When you're standing in the sun, it's hot.
You know what I mean? Like, we have a full spring.
I was blotting in the State House on Tuesday. It was
Scott,
so dang hot.
You would be blotting if we were in a snowstorm.
It's true. It's possible.
Because as just a tribute to the weather and this beautiful full spring that,
yes,
we're having here at the end of February, mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you this question.
Okay.
What cities and towns in South Carolina have the word spring in their name?
Springfield.
Okay.
Ridge Spring.
Go ahead, please. God, you're going to get them all, and I'm going to be...
Springdale. It's not... shoot. Give me a geographic clue.
One of your favorite former House members that you enjoyed working with on a number of annexation bills... She hails from this county in which this...
Heath Springs.
That's correct.
Hmm.
That's it.
That's it? Boom.
Ridge Spring in Saluda.
Yep.
Springdale in Lexington.
Yep.
Springfield in Orangeburg.
Mm-hmm.
And Heath Springs in Lancaster.
Heath Springs, home of former Mayor Taylor. What was Mayor Taylor's first name? Mary...
What, Mary? I can't remember.
You know who I'm talking,
yes,
about, though.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
She'd been mayor forever.
Yeah.
She brought a lot of money to the town through CDBG funds.
It's going to drive me crazy.
Rehab that water system. Okay, good. Well, I got most of them.
You did.
Without prompting.
You did.
How about that?
Just one prompt. And I knew if I gave you that clue, you'd get it. I didn't want to do the other one. I'll give you the other one, too.
Oh, really?
We'll knock out two and one.
There's another?
Well, there was, Mr. Producer gave me
options,
an initial one, and then I decided, because I had a really good lead in.
Yeah, that was great. That was a fabulous segue.
That I wanted to change it. But this is a quick one.
Well, this is exciting, folks. You get a bonus trivia question.
And I know you have to go to your second guest spot, so let's make this quick. Packed calendar. how many municipalities in South Carolina have Mount in the name?
I'll see. Mount Pleasant, Mount Croghan, who else?
There's a third one, but it has Mount in the name, not necessarily a Mount.
Mm. Gosh, give me another clue.
It is home to the Reunion Festival that I have been to several times and have had a wonderful time.
There's an antique store.
One of my very favorite former House members, Walt McLeod, is from this area.
Oh, man.
It is in Newberry County.
Oh, what? Oh, Little Mountain.
Little Mountain.
Little Mountain.
Very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not a Mount Pleasant Mount. And which?
Little Mountain is actually geographically considered a monadnock.
What is that?
Go look that up.
Why? I mean, you
these things take up
space in your brain. It's unbelievable.
What was
me,
Buddy? But
Jay-Z songs.
The former mayor in Little Mountain. Buddy, what was Buddy's last name? Doggone it. can't remember. I can see his face.
Dude, it's Thursday. I can barely remember my kids' names at this point.
He was a true little mountaineer.
I can barely remember my children's names.
All right, I did pretty good there.
You did great, especially for two. I mean, you got
that's
the majority.
Yeah,
I mean, you got it. You did a really good job.
Okay.
Quite proud. Well, we'll let you go to your other job. and we, I encourage you to read the report. And email, call, text with any questions, and we will see you back here next week with a report on the House Ways and Means Committee's version of the budget. Talk to everybody next week.
Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.